You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Christine Buckley, and you're listening to Field Talk, a podcast in which we discuss the work of authors whose papers have been published in three of the Society's journals, Ecology, Ecological Applications, and Ecological Monographs. Today I'm speaking with Shay Wolf, a staff biologist in the Climate Law Institute at the Center for Biological Diversity in San Francisco. Dr. Wolf's research in the March issue of Ecology focuses on the effects of ocean climate change on Cassin's auklets. Wolf found that the seabirds' breeding success was closely tied to ocean climate conditions along the western coast of North America, suggesting that the lives of these birds could be affected by global climate change. Dr. Wolf, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So first of all, can you explain to us what exactly an auklet is?
Yeah, auklets are small diving seabirds, and they're closely related to better-known seabirds like puffins or the marbled murrelet or murres. And a Cassin's auklet is a gray, kind of mango-sized auklet that is not as decoratively plumaged as many of the other auklets, but they do have really wonderful blue feet and legs. Auklets are diving seabirds, which means that they use their wings to swim underwater to catch their food, which is mostly zooplankton like copepods and krill. And auklets are also burrow nesters. So they use their strong legs and very sharp toenails to dig burrows, sometimes a meter or more in length. And they lay their eggs and rear their chicks in these burrows.
Their lives must really be tied to the sea if they only feed on things that live at sea.
That's right. They spend most of their lives at sea, foraging, and they return to land, to offshore islands, when they need to breed. They have a really, really broad breeding range. So they're found all the way from the Aleutian Islands off Alaska to islands off Baja California in northern Mexico. They're really concentrated in areas where there's upwelling. So that means areas where there are nutrient-rich waters that are brought to the surface, which really produce a bloom of food. There's a lot of food in upwelling areas. And I studied Cassin's auklets in the California Current system, which is this coastal upwelling system that runs from Canada to Mexico, and it's one of the most productive ocean regions in the world.
My understanding is that upwelling happens when cold water comes from deep in the ocean, comes to the surface, and brings a lot of nutrients with it.
Yeah, that's right. In coastal upwelling systems, what happens is that during the spring and summer, there are these upwelling favorable winds that kind of run along the coast, and they kind of push the water. And because of the rotation of the earth, that water gets pushed offshore. And so there's kind of a water vacuum near shore because all the water is getting pushed upshore. And so that has to be replaced by water from somewhere. And that water comes from the depths.
Oh,
that water is cold and more concentrated in nutrients. And it rises to the surface and really fuels these blooms.
These upwellings, as you just described, are really important to these birds. So it makes sense that you'd want to measure them so that you could figure out how much of an effect they have on the birds. How do you measure how intense or important a certain upwelling event is?
You can really learn a lot about the ocean from satellites. And so I chose a couple of ways of trying to get at ocean conditions that would measure productivity, measure kind of the food in the ocean around where auklets are breeding. And so these were sea surface temperature and a measure of the upwelling intensity. And I also measured sea surface height, which kind of is a variable that integrates temperature and upwelling and also kind of really captures warm water El Nino events that happen in the system.
So is it true that when sea surface height is higher, that means that the water is warmer?
That's right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the sea surface is lower when there's a lot of upwelling and higher when there isn't as much upwelling.
These birds seem to have similar requirements, yet they live in this really huge latitudinal range. So you've got some up near Alaska and some down off the coast of Mexico. What are the differences that they're experiencing because of this huge difference in latitude?
One that really immediately springs to mind is just overall average temperature. So in the north, conditions are colder, and to the south, conditions are warmer. A really important difference in their foraging environments, going from north to south, is that in the north, their environment's really seasonal. So there are these kind of peaks in upwelling and peaks in ocean food in the spring and summer, whereas in the southern parts of the range, it's a very aseasonal environment. So there's low upwelling year-round. Food is delivered at a lower level year-round.
So you have to go out onto these islands and then measure reproductive success. Are you getting into just dozens and dozens of these nests and pulling out their eggs and counting them and making them angry when you when you get in their space, I guess?
Yeah, they all have very different personalities. So some are very calm and most are very feisty. We study auklets at all three colony sites. We study auklets in nest boxes. And so a nest box, if you can picture it, is like a shoebox that has a very long kind of entrance tube made of kind of this corrugated PVC pipe. And so you can kind of bury those in the ground where just the tube entrance is sticking out of the ground. And aqua will use that. And so you can lift the top off of the shoebox and then you can reach the birds and the chicks to do easier measurements and kind of to spy on them much easier. Yeah, I looked at timing of breeding and reproductive success. And what I found was that there were some important differences. Timing of breeding differed across the populations, where kind of the northern and central populations that were using these very seasonal environments where there were these peaks of productivity nested in kind of a short few-week period in March and April, whereas auklets in this aseasonal environment to the south started nesting much earlier in November to January, and they nested over a longer time period of about 3 to 4 months. And so timing of breeding kind of was co-varied across the northern and central population, but not with the southern population that was doing something very different. And I think what this has to do with the seasonality of the environment. We think that seabirds use cues in their marine foraging environment to time their breeding to peaks in prey productivity. So they can, adults can get fat before the breeding season and that they will have enough food for their chicks. And so in these really seasonal environments in the northern and central regions, the birds, we think, used cues, oceanographic cues in the spring to time their breeding.
They would breed later if the ocean climate was warmer. Is that right?
That's right. So breed later when conditions in spring were warmer, meaning that there wasn't that peak in food would be delayed. And they bred earlier when springs were cold and when there was a lot of upwelling, when there was already a lot of food and it was looking like it was going to be a really good season, a really good time to start breeding. But in the southern region, where it's very aseasonal, we didn't find any relationships between climate and timing of breeding. We know that reproductive success for all populations is really strongly influenced by ocean climate. So for all populations, the birds did better in years where the ocean was colder and there was more upwelling. And so any kind of interruption, in upwelling, warming of the water, in decrease in upwelling will affect populations across the California current system. But specifically, I think that kind of delays in upwelling, so kind of shifts in when that upwelling peak happens will especially affect those northern and central populations that really time their breeding to overlap with these peaks in prey availability.
And so you said you did these studies over 6 years. Were you spending 6 months of every summer out on these islands looking at these birds?
Yeah. I happen to choose a species that has a really, really long breeding season and that nests on relatively remote islands. So it made the field work really logistically difficult because it was relatively remote with very little communication. And during the first part of the field season, I would share the island with a local fishermen who were fishing abalone, and they were extremely helpful in helping me get to and from the islands and transport my equipment. And I was able to become proficient in Spanish, which was really nice. And after the fishermen would leave for the season, then I was shared the island with a smaller group of really colorful characters, mainly the often drunken lighthouse keeper and his donkeys, and a small group of vigilantes, which were young men that patrolled the island waters at night to try and fend off abalone poachers. Other things that stand out were that we needed electricity to run our computers and lights and radios, and so I brought solar panels, and it was really fun to be able to generate all our electricity just from the sun.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah, that was really fun. We also built our own furniture because we'd go to the beaches, after a big storm, the beaches, that kind of become like the Walmart of the ocean. There's just so much stuff that washes up. I mean, it's kind of depressing because there's so much plastic stuff, but you can comb the beaches for driftwood, and we built desks and chairs and tables from driftwood. So that was nice just to be able to bring a hammer and some nails and be able to create your own furniture.
In your opinion, what's the most exciting thing about your research?
There's two ways to answer that. And one is that I think that this research really shows how sensitive Cassin's auklets are to climate change. And Cassin's auklet populations in California and the largest auklet population in Canada have really declined precipitously over the last few decades. And those declines are linked to changes in ocean climate. And I think that this research shows that auklets across this large upwelling system across 2,500 kilometers are very vulnerable to the increases in ocean temperature that are occurring and changes in the winds that could affect upwelling in the system. And auklets are really good indicators of what could happen to other predators in the system. I mean, they're really good indicators of how well salmon do in the system. And so I think there are good indicators in general of how how climate change will affect this incredibly productive system. And I think, the second thing from doing my research that's really stood out for me is that the islands in Baja California, kind of the southern part of this coastal upwelling system, are incredibly important for breeding seabirds and marine mammals, and they're very underappreciated, understudied, and underprotected. When I was, out on these islands during the spring and summer, there are tens to hundreds of thousands of seabirds, kind of peppering the skies at night. So there are nocturnally active seabirds like the Cassin's auklet, like storm petrels, shearwaters, and murrelets that come and go from the islands at night because they're trying to avoid predation. There are so many. There is such incredible abundance, diversity, and endemism of seabirds on these islands, and it really highlights that these islands should be priorities for protection and for some more research.
That was Shay Wolf, a staff biologist in the Climate Law Institute at the Center for Biological Diversity in San Francisco, speaking about her paper in the March issue of Ecology. I'm Christine Buckley. Thanks for listening to Field Talk.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Gatelli. For a link to Dr. Gatelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.